Yeah. So our sponsor.
Yeah. Sponsor is Olipop. Actually, no. Forget that I said that because they haven't paid us yet.
They haven't paid us.
It's some generic soda that we picked up at the grocery store.
My personal favorite flavor is strawberry vanilla.
The strawberry, yeah, I'm having a lemon lime.
We're not going to talk about the
tastes like a lemon lime soda.
Supports digestive health because I'm not really sure about that. But yeah, it tastes
know if
good.
It really supports my digestive health or not.
And it's good.
It's good stuff.
Sweetened with stevia, so
yeah,
I'll do it. Okay. But anyway.
Anyway, we'll pretend that they sponsored us just so I have an excuse to drink into the microphone one more time. Did you pick that up? The producer pick that one up?
Got it.
Okay.
Got
it. All right.
Loretta will appreciate that, too.
Okay. So now we're at the Four Musketeers. Okay? And the Four Musketeers.
So the seven. That 3 + 4 makes 7.
Three plus four makes 7. Okay. So the beginning. Okay.
Which one of these is your favorite?
Well, I think it's the Four Musketeers.
I was going to say the fourth one is my favorite.
Just because it does finally finish off the story. It finishes off the story in a much more convincing final.
Ooh.
Boy.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do a stunt.
We're talking about characters.
Yeah,
it is
where I would not want to live in that time period, for sure.
Yeah, and we're talking about if you were to do a sequel. Well, they did do a sequel to this, but The Return of the Musketeer, I believe. Yeah. But there were, let's just say that there were several characters that they couldn't bring back because they were in the Four.
But then actually, like, one of the actors actually did die during the making of that film.
Oh. Franchet, the servant?
Franchet, yeah.
To D'Artagnan. D'Artagnan.
Yeah, he was a really good friend of Richard Lester, and Richard Lester, like, stopped making movies for a while after that.
Oh, that's right. Oh, and he's a funny guy.
He's kind of a comic relief in that movie, too.
A portly fellow.
In both movies.
Yeah, they tell D'Artagnan you need to hire a servant if you're going to be. Because,
he had to make a journey one of the times to warn the Buckingham, or Duke of Buckingham.
Oh, in the Four Musketeers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
and he's working so hard to get there. Oh, I mean, he's just giving his all. I mean, he's kind of like.
He really is.
He's
carrying all.
He's kind of like the equipment manager.
Yes,
yeah, he's like the equipment manager for a football team.
He's so cute.
They force him to carry around, like, because at the beginning of the movie, okay, they're actually in battle. They're fighting against the Huguenots, and they have to go somewhere to talk about this plot. They find out that Milady de Winter is pretty mad at D'Artagnan because he foiled this plot that she was a part of, and you know, he embarrassed her.
But why was she so upset?
I forgot. Yeah, he has an affair with Milady de Winter because actually, Constance gets kidnapped. Okay, Constance gets kidnapped at the beginning of this film, and he suspects that Milady de Winter has something to do with it. In fact, he's been told that she does, and so he tries to worm his way in with her, and he ends up having, you know, sleeping with her. And then when
it's part of the job.
It's part of finding
the woman he loves.
There's a whole lot of that going on around here, and he discovers that she wears this band around her shoulder, this little black band. Okay, and then while they're in bed, he pulls down the band and he sees that there is this brand on her of the fleur-de-lis. Okay, and that means that this is something that, you know, they don't kill you, but the executioner brands you in public because you've done something really bad. Okay, like, you could be a murderer, you could just be an adulteress, you could be, who knows exactly what it was, but it was something really, really bad that as a woman you got branded with this. And then D'Artagnan sees this, and it's like, when he sees this, she gets so mad at him, and she's out to get him for sure after that. And he eventually tells Athos about this, and Athos says, what did she say? She's got this what? And then Athos tells him a story, because D'Artagnan is heartbroken because Constance is gone and Athos is giving him a hard time. Why do you care about Constance? You know, why do you have to be in love? Why do you think this is such a big deal? What, you're stupid to be falling in love. And he says, no, I love her. And he says, well, what about Milady? You're hanging out with Milady. He says, oh, Milady, I love her with my head, but Constance, I love her with my heart. And so he, Athos then says, let me tell you a story. And he says, there was this guy once. There was this guy, great man, a count, this really rich man. And we figure out that he's talking about himself. And he meets this woman, and he falls in love with this woman, this beautiful woman, and he marries her, and he's, you know, she's going to share his wealth and all of that. And then one day he discovers she falls off her horse, and he notices on her shoulder the brand of the fleur-de-lis. Okay. And so that's when they figure out, uh-oh, this milady, that's your ex-wife. And he thought she was, Athos thought she was dead. He actually thought he had killed her. He had just, like, I don't know, choked her and left her. But anyway, she didn't die, and she's back to haunt them both. Okay, so that's her backstory. I mean, what a great plot this is. Okay, this is a, you talk about your plots, you talk about your intrigue, you got it here. Okay, so anyway, Milady's out to get him. So they have to talk about this while they're in battle. Franche is their equipment manager. Like I said, he's got to carry the muskets for them when they go to fight.
Hands are always full.
Yeah, yeah. They, because they make this bet that they can have breakfast up at this place that's under fire. And anyway, so it turns out, we'll cut to the chase. There's all kinds of stuff. It turns out that the Cardinal has given Milady de Winter a license to, the Cardinal sends her off to execute the Duke of Buckingham, which she manages to pull off, not directly, but indirectly, through basically seducing somebody to do it for her. And then he has given her a license because she's murdering people. She says she wants to be able to murder D'Artagnan and Constance as payment. And the Pope, the Cardinal says, oh, I'm not going to do that. But she says, well, you know, you're asking me to kill somebody. And so he writes her this license that basically says, the bearer of this letter has, you know, by my order and for the good of the state, the bearer has done what has been done, which is basically to say you get off. And so she's got this. So now she can kill Constance and D'Artagnan. And she plans to do just that. And we'll just stop there, okay? Because we're not going to spoil everything.
No, there are some great scenes.
Yeah, there's some great, great scenes. And everybody's going to, just trust me, everything is going to get resolved eventually in the most exciting way imaginable.
Yeah. Okay. Shocking.
Yeah.
You're going to be shocked.
Yeah. So tell us some more about some of these wonderful people who are in this film. I understand you kind of have a thing for Charlton Heston. Is that true?
I do.
D? Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of my first crushes.
Oh, yeah?
Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments?
Ten Commandments. Oh, yeah. Moses.
Moses.
But Moses before he was Moses.
Oh,
yeah, so I had a thing before the beard. That was after he left, after he was no longer in line to be Pharaoh.
Yeah.
It was like, so it's not full through. I can't love him throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was Christopher Plummer from Sound Music
and Charlton Heston.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And everybody knows who Charlton Heston is. Okay. And actually, he was a huge name at the time. He'd already obviously made the Ten Commandments, but he had made
Ben-Hur. He won an Oscar for Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur, yes. This is about the time he was
making Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, he had made Planet of the Apes.
Soylent Green.
The Omega Man, yeah.
I saw a small movie. I had Chet watch it one time many years ago, I think. Call of the Wild.
The Call of the Wild?
Yeah, he's like a dog sledder.
I don't even remember
his
that
dogs
one.
Dogs die. Oh, it's a really sad movie.
It's
dies.
So sad. Okay.
Spoiler alert. It's really sad.
Yeah.
But
anyway,
it's a dark movie.
He was a huge name. I can't remember, but they wanted him to play Athos originally.
Well, they wanted him to be a musketeer, and he was like, excuse me, unless I'm D'Artagnan, no. I'm not going to be less than Michael York, so I will play a cameo and do Cardinal.
But he was probably a little too old.
Can you imagine him being a musketeer?
No, he
plays a good villain.
No.
I mean,
no, he's a great villain.
I mean, he was good in Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments as non-villains, but he's best as a villain.
Yeah. It's true. I mean,
I don't know how many villains. He really did really well with the
Charlton villain. Heston was the kind of guy that even when he was a good guy,
there was something there.
He was kind of a jerk. He was just kind of a jerk even when he was a good guy. I mean, that was part of his charm. I guess he had
a ton of great voices in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, because Charlton Heston's voice alone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, he was really interested in the character of Richelieu. And I think he even asked specifically to add one line that he had read that Richelieu is Christopher Lee. I'm sorry. The Cardinal. Roquefort. At one point in time, D'Artagnan talks about, I keep running into enemies that wear your coat. And he's talking about the Cardinal's guards who dress in red like the... Okay. And he says, I have no enemies, only those of France, which apparently was something that the Cardinal actually said historically. And Charlton Heston said, I want that line in the movie. And so it's in the movie. Okay. So there's Charlton Heston for you. Faye Dunaway. Tell us about Faye Dunaway.
Faye Dunaway. I mean...
Big time.
She got to play... I mean, okay. There were a lot of male actors that got to play opposite her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, millennials would know her from her saying that La La Land won the best Oscar.
Oh, that's right.
Because Beattie had a card for the previous Emma Stone one. Anyway.
Uh-huh.
So that's what she would most recently know her from.
Okay.
So she got to play with Robert Redford.
3 Days
Condor.
3 Days of the Condor. Great movie. Great movie.
And that's
with
it.
Warren Beatty.
Right.
With Warren. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we can stop with that. But she.
Yeah.
So she, in Chinatown, neither of us has seen it. But I guess she was really good in it.
Yeah.
A lot of people wanted her to win the Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
But she lost to, we both recently watched Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Oh, yeah.
She lost to her.
Yeah. Okay.
But she did finally win for Network.
One of our favorites. I mean, talk about a great movie, Network. Yeah, and Faye Dunaway is fantastic in there. Yeah, her career kind of slowed down after
the
1980 hit, and I don't know.
I think she was
a little flaky too.
Well, people weren't really happy with her Mommy Dearest movie choice.
She regretted
doing that role.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of moved it. She was married to a guy, and they moved to Britain.
She did hot stuff there for about 10 years, really. She was one of the biggest names in Hollywood, and she is fantastic in this. I mean, because she is sinister, she is evil.
Cold.
Yeah, this is a, wow, you do not want to be in the crosshairs of this woman, okay? So, yeah. Tell us about Oliver Reed.
Well, again, he was known for being a drunk. And with Peter O'Toole and what was Elizabeth Taylor's husband's name? Richard Burton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were known
drinking
for
buddies?
Known okay. for like beating up people.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Wrecking stuff.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. People would know him from Gladiator.
Gladiator. I was going to say, Russell Crowe kind of has a little bit of that reputation, but he's got nothing on Oliver Reed. Yeah.
And he was actually, Oliver Reed was actually in Oliver.
In Oliver, the musical, I saw that when I was a child, and he scared me to death.
I would be scared.
Because I think he murders somebody in that. I think he murders a woman in that. Yeah, that's
Is
the
that
way.
A PG okay. movie or a G?
I think it's a G. Don't quote me on
death
this. I saw
child?
This when it came out in theaters.
Isn't
I was
like,
in elementary school.
Isn't the target audience children?
Yeah, I believe it is. Yes,
wow.
It is. It is a dark
well,
movie.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never seen it again.
Orphan,
it
like
scarred me. Yeah.
Thank God for Annie.
But they do sing in between the murders. Anyway.
But he was actually like that that character where he's mm-hmm. drinking and pretty violent. Well, not
yeah.
okay.
And
not
well,
violent,
they
but
said,
just rough.
Well, they
he's
said
rough.
That on like, the he, set of this movie, I mean, he learned to sword fight like everybody else. But apparently, what was it? Christopher Lee said he scared him. Like,
oh, he did.
He was so intense, so intense, yeah. And they were using real swords. And like, ooh, he, yeah. I mean, and when he does the fight scenes, oh, he is all in. Mm-mm. I mean, he's like, I love it when he actually is fighting with Richelieu in the Four Musketeers toward the end of the movie. I mean, he picks up the dirt and he, you know, gets it on his hands and he spits and he's like, come on, like it's like a football movie at that moment. I mean, he is just so into it. And yeah, that's the kind of guy he was. Yeah.
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 Let's see. So then we have...
Michael York. We used to talk about Michael York. Michael York was also a really big deal for... if you're a millennial, you
he
might
know... He was in an episode of Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, he was one of Lorelai's boyfriends?
No. He was a professor.
He was a professor. Oh, they never got together?
No.
Oh, okay. Anyway, well...
That would have been an interesting dynamic. Lorelai and...
He would have been quite a bit older, character. I guess. Not, I guess, no?
Well, Lorelai... I mean, it would have been an age gap, but not
So. Anyway, but famous actor again in the 1970s. He was in just right and left.
A lot of these actors were in television, like either in shows or TV movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of, who was the king?
There's not really much more to Michael York, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, he was great.
He was quite good in this movie, but still. But yeah, who was the king of the miniseries? Who was the
Chamberlain?
Undisputed, yeah. Richard Chamberlain. He did. I don't think I ever saw the Thornbirds, but I remember it was a huge deal. I think when I was in high school, everybody was talking about it. I never got around to seeing it, but it was like the biggest miniseries of the time. And then we did see him in the movie about your relative,
Raoul Wallenberg.
Wallenberg, yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty exciting. I didn't know about wasn't new to my family, but it was new to me that I have a relative, Raoul Wallenberg. You should look him up. He was a Swedish ambassador that helped Jewish refugees in Turkey escape.
Oh, yeah. Escape the Holocaust. Yeah. Famous guy. Yeah. Yeah. And they made a really good little miniseries about it. I don't know.
It was a really good TV movie.
Yeah. Very well done. Yeah.
I did not, but I'm a person that recognizes people in movies, and I did not recognize him in the Raoul Wallenberg.
No. Yeah. Well, you know, in this one, you know, he's got the mustache and he's getting the hat on and all that kind of stuff. It's okay. Don't beat yourself up.
He had
about
a beard, and actually, this is not important to his character.
Yeah.
In the movie, but I think it's important to talk about. He did come out as gay, and I think that's important to talk about just because of how hard it is for.
Oh yeah,
he had to hide that.
Oh yeah, he would have been in the closet for decades. Yeah, because he didn't come out until fairly, like, at the end of his career, right? Yeah. Oh, and he was, you know, he was considered a sex symbol, too. I mean, all the women were going crazy for him. He's excellent in this movie, too. He's just the right touch. He's Mr. Handsome as Aramis, and yeah. Then Frank Finlay is just fantastic.
Yes, stage actor, yes.
Fantastic as Porthos. He is so funny. And he actually gets to play two characters in this. They had this really little part of the guy who we talked about, the diamond studs that go missing. And so he plays the English character, who's the smith who has to replace the diamond studs for the Duke of Buckingham. He's really good. Really, really good. But again, mostly stage work for him.
Well, Chris, we've talked a little bit about Christopher Lee. Again, he was really good.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. Yeah, you want a sinister villain, and he's cool, too, because he's not just straight evil. It's like, this is my job, okay? I'm a badass, true, it's my job. And working for the Cardinal is kind of like working for the Mafia. It's really that kind of dynamic, and I've got to do his dirty work. I have to do whatever he tells me. But there are actually several moments, or at least a couple of moments in this film, where Richelieu kind of confronts the Cardinal and says, "Yeah, I'll do whatever you want me to do, but you know, I think you're a jerk, basically. Like, oh, well, it's actually, they send him to spy on the Huguenots, and he comes back and he gets captured, and the musketeers have to rescue him, which they hate doing, but that's their job. And then he comes back and, you know, the cardinal is talking about, you know, how he failed. And he said, you know, if I failed as you did, my head would fall. And then Richelieu says, well, from a greater height than mine, from the height of vaulting ambition. And then Richelieu gets put in his place. But anyway, he's an interesting character because even though he's got to be the bad guy, it's just his job. He's just doing what he has to do. Like all of these people are doing what they have to do. They talk about, the musketeers themselves talk about, why are we fighting these Huguenots anyway? Like Porthos has lied. Is because, you know, we say prayers in Latin and they say them in French. Why does that's a reason to have a war? And Aramis, the aspiring priest, says, oh, don't you understand what these religious wars are about? And, you know, this is in the middle of a battle. It's like, we think this is stupid. We don't understand what any of this is about, but we're stuck with it. And again, that's this extra layer that Lester puts into the film. And it's part of what makes all these characters so incredible. Tell us more about Raquel Welch. You got something? No, don't give me that look. Tell.
I think she was a single mom.
I know she got married really, really young, and then divorced right away. There's nothing else you want to tell me about Raquel Welch? Look, she was huge in the 1970s. She started making films in the 1960s. Okay. She wasn't all that tall, actually. She made that very, if you've seen The Shawshank Redemption, okay, if you're a millennial, you've probably still seen The Shawshank Redemption, and she's in The Shawshank Redemption.
Didn't remember that.
She is the movie poster in his cell. He's got the movie poster of her from, I forget if it's 10,000 BC or whatever it is. It's this prehistoric movie. It's her breakout performance. She plays a cave woman and she wears this animal hide bikini through the whole thing. That's the poster. When you watch The Shawshank Redemption and you see the big poster of the woman in the bikini in there, that's Raquel Welch. And that was her first movie. I know I got you to watch Fantastic Voyage. Mm-hmm. I think that might have been her second. She was, you know, that's a great movie. Her part is, you know, kind of, why do they have to have her there? I don't know.
Just we saw her in a mystery movie Glass Onion was inspired by.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you've seen The Glass Onion, that was inspired by an earlier movie from the 1970s. I forget.
It was fun.
Rachel? I forget what the name of the movie. You'll have to look it up. But she was in that. She was okay. Yeah,
I mean, honestly, if you're listening, you're a Raquel Welch fan. I got nothing against. Really not that deep. My beef with Raquel Welch isn't that deep.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know what else to say about this movie to recommend it to you, but it is, like I said, it's one of my favorites. It's.
What does it teach us about people?
Well, here you go. Well, first of all, this has been a favorite. Part of the reason I'm sure that I like the movie more than you, this has been a favorite of boys and young men for generations and generations because it's a story about friendship. This is the ultimate buddy movie.
Okay? Yeah, it's not like I could be like, I want to be like Lady de Winter or Constance or the Queen.
I'm sorry, in those days, you could not have been a musketeer. Although I think in that sequel, they actually have the daughter of one of the characters. I think it's Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City, I think is... She actually becomes like... Anyway, I don't remember what happens in that movie, but they actually get a woman.
So that's probably why I like Milan. I love Milan.
Yeah. Okay. But so this is it is in many respects it's a guy movie, and it's a movie that.
So like the Three Musketeers is like Milan for me, I suppose. Well,
a little bit, but there's more to it than that. It's not just about going off and being a hero.
Yeah.
It's a movie about friendship. Okay. It's about the bond that the and what's so cool. These are four disparate characters, really. Athos, the former count. Aramis, the guy who's studying to become a priest. Porthos, the ridiculous guy who thinks he's a gentleman. And D'Artagnan, this country bumpkin. Okay? They've got so little in common, but yet they bond together. They look past what's ridiculous in one another, and they find the qualities that they admire, that complement themselves, and they are all for one and one for all. There's something incredibly romantic about that. And I know you've seen Beau Geste, okay? In the beginning of Beau Geste, when they're playing, one of the things they play make-believe is that they're going to be the Musketeers. Because this story was inspiring kids way back then. That was 100 years after the book was written. They were reading it then. People are still reading this book now. And there is something just incredibly romantic about this notion of being loyal to your friends and setting off on a shared adventure with them, accepting them for who they are, even though they're not exactly like you, even though they've got their faults and their frailties, and even though they don't always want to go along with what you are suggesting that they do, they say, okay, if you're in, I'm there with you, because that's the only way life works. I mean, there are so many times in life you want to play a game, you got to get other people to go along with you. You want to move your furniture, you got to call your friends together. I mean, there's just something about knowing that people will be there for you and with you and share that is just incredibly inspiring. And we don't have enough of that. I know we've been reading articles about, you know, what is friendship, but, you know, was it because of the pandemic? Is it because of technology? What is it that people don't have friendships at the same level anymore? Or maybe it's just because we can't avoid talking about politics and we become polarized over that, or I don't know what it is, but this is a story about friendship, and you look at this and you say, God, I wish I had that in my life. I wish I had that kind of relationship. And for me, again, I saw this in college. I took this movie back to college, and I got my three best friends together, and I said, we're going to watch this movie, and they all loved it. And we spent the next 2 years making jokes and repeating lines from this movie and playing out scenes, and it was just part of the bond in our relationship, was this fictional relationship between these friends. And I think that's one of the obvious things about it. And the second thing, I think, I talked about this a little bit earlier, was, again, this was a romantic story, a part of the Romantic Age. And probably when Dumas wrote this story, he was thinking, boy, wasn't life better back then? Wasn't it cool when people were not riding in trains and not working in, you know, cities, but they were fighting for the king, and they were riding horses and carrying swords and all that kind of stuff? And yeah, maybe Dumas thought that, but I think when we look at this, again, Richard Lester, the director, helps point out, no, it wasn't that the time was romantic. Because the time was pretty crappy. The time, the monarchy was ridiculous. The wars were ridiculous. The rampant poverty was ridiculous. The living conditions, some people were living in opulence and other people were living in squalor. There's nothing romantic about that. What's romantic is friendship. What's romantic is love. And these characters are aware of the fact that what they're doing maybe isn't, the war isn't romantic, the characters are aware of that, maybe they're not always faithful to their lovers, but they're doing the best they can. And romance, I think what we learn from this movie is romance is what you make of it. You choose to find relationships. You choose to find causes, and maybe they're not perfect, but you say, I'm going to be all in. And again, I think that's something that we all want from life, and if we don't have it, we miss it. So
I can't relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you can't. Anyway, so that's what I think, that's why I love this movie. I think that's what you could get out of it.
Actually, I agree with that.
Yeah. It's now your favorite movie of all time, too. Your favorite two movies of all time.
My favorite two movies and two jugs.
Yeah. One of Raquel Welch's movies, Mother, Jugs, and Speed. Guess what her nickname was? It was not Speed. Yeah. It was not Mother either. Okay. All right. Anything else?
I'm not good at subtracting.
Yeah. Okay.
But listen, again, I am a mother. Mm-hmm. So, and my daughter, Loretta, I'm very devoted to her. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Hopefully, the only time we can record is when she's asleep at night. So, we'll try to do more podcasts.
Okay.
But.
And you can bet she's going to watch this movie.
It might be two for the price of one.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. She's already seen it.
She's already seen it.
Mm-hmm. She loved it.
She did like the fight scenes.
Yeah. So, okay. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.